coming up on Path to Zero.
We believe that this technology can let you make your own electricity cheaper than you can buy from most of the grid across the U.S.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, President and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello, Path to Zero listeners. Today we're talking about one of the biggest challenges in energy, how to deliver reliable, flexible power as demand surges from AI, data centers, and electrification. Our guest is Thomas Healy, founder and CEO of Hylion. The company has made a bold shift from trucking to modular power generation, focusing on delivering scalable, fuel-flexible energy where it's needed most. Thomas, welcome to Path to Zero. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Thanks for having me on, Tucker. As always, great seeing you, and looking forward to sharing more with your viewers about what Hylion is up to.
Well, let's start right there. I mean, not only is almost every conversation today around producing power, but you're producing power, I think, in a very unique way for people who really are interested in getting power, but being very concerned around environmental. So talk about maybe Hylion, talk about this Carnot generator, kind of give us a primer in your everyday world.
Absolutely. So, and you're right, power is the discussion that everyone's having right now. Data centers are leading the charge for sure, but even past that, like industrial applications like oil and gas, or even just commercial buildings, right? Everyone is seeing their power rates go up, and it's happening fast, big percentage changes each year. And so people are starting to look at, well, if I can't get the electricity I need from the utility, can I make it myself behind the meter? Or if the electricity I'm buying is just too expensive, can I make it cheaper myself as well? And that's where Hylion comes in. We've developed a new way of making electricity and a technology that really enables behind the meter or distributed grid power generation. So think of, you know, a commercial building. Most commercial buildings have air conditioning systems. Just like there's a box outside making that cold air, we want to put another box right next to it that's actually there taking fuels like propane or natural gas or hydrogen or diesel and making electricity. Now, you think of a normal generator, you usually think of like emergency standby power. Our business model is, this is prime power. If you own one of these things, this is the way you should make electricity and remove your dependency from the grid and make your own electrons. So that's the very high level. Obviously, we can dive deep into it though.
And let's talk about something very interesting about your technology, because I believe you use the word flameless. Certainly, we don't talk about combustion like we do in a traditional generator, and that leads to a really significant benefit for emissions, which, by the way, may be the unspoken secret about so much of the power generation that's going on today. Much of it is fueled by diesel power, and the emissions from it are relatively bad. Tell us about what flameless, and maybe explain to the listeners about this unique combustion method.
Sure, absolutely. So I'll maybe just start with, like, when people hear generators or power generation, you usually think of an internal combustion engine, a turbine, maybe a fuel cell. With ours, it's actually based on Stirling engine technology. So a little history lesson here. If you go back 200 years ago, there was the steam engine. That's what was being prevalently used. There was also this idea or this invention of this thing called the Stirling. Even 200 years ago, it was known that like Stirling was the euphoria way to make power. It's got the ability to be super efficient, very low maintenance, the kind of the two main buckets that you look at when you're looking to make power. And the problem has been, though, over the last 200 years, it hasn't been heavily utilized. There's a few use cases here and there, but for the most part, it was way too difficult to manufacture. So what we've done is we said, all right, euphoria of how to make power was invented 200 years ago, hasn't been used because of manufacturing. Well, there's been a major breakthrough in manufacturing thanks to 3D printing or additive manufacturing. So what we do is we took this 200-year-old concept, brought it to today and said, well, let's 3D print the really complex parts And then that way we can actually bring forward this this euphoria solution. And so that's why we're able to get like power plant level performance out of a very small box that can go at your facility. To your question though, around the flameless side. So the whole concept of a Stirling is you have trapped gas and all you want to do is heat that gas up and cause it to expand. And then you cool it down and cause it to contract. So heat and cool and heat and cool. And you do that like 20 times a second. And we use that motion to actually make the power. Now, the reason that we call it a flameless oxidation process is because we have a proprietary way of taking that fuel in and actually reacting it to make heat. Now, what we do is we suppress oxygen levels. We keep the temperature right at a sweet spot where it has extremely low emissions. And it's actually this unique reaction process called flameless oxidation, where if you could actually be on the inside of our Carnot power module, you actually couldn't see a flame, but all the metal around you is glowing because it's making heat. So it's this really, really cool concept that allows for extremely low emissions and fuel flexibility.
Yeah, I know. It's fascinating. And you're seeing the market come to you now. And when people come to you, are they interested in your power node? Are they interested in the fact that you have such a wide range of available fuels you can use? Or are they interested in you because of your emissions? Or maybe all of the above?
Yeah, it truly is all the above. And it depends on who the customer is, right? So to go through some of the use cases, like data centers are, the initial question is, how fast can I get power? And then the second question is, what's my cost per kilowatt hour, right? Since they're consuming so much power, they want to make sure it's low cost electricity to be financially effective. Another bucket is the military. We work closely with the Office of Naval Research, so the Navy. We're also expanding programs with other branches of the government. All of our work with them actually started on the low maintenance aspect. So the Navy is actually putting us first on a fully unmanned autonomous ship. It's like this 200-foot ship, no crew on board. I got to board the ship a few months ago. It's fascinating. All it is these engine bays where our technology goes in, and then fuel all around it stored in the hull. And then on the deck of the ship, they can put whatever weaponry or monitoring systems they want. But what's unique about it is our system has an extremely low maintenance profile and it doesn't have any oils, any lubricants. So when you think about like a diesel engine conventionally, normally you have to have someone there that's constantly doing oil changes versus with us that doesn't exist. And that's really important when you don't have a crew on board to maintain the engine. Then we have other applications in California where it's all about emissions, right? It's about make sure you meet the air permits and the air quality district's mandates. And so that's where our emissions benefits a big win. Then there are other applications that it's the fuel flexibility. They want to be able to switch from diesel to natural gas. So I'm going on and on, but as you can see, like this technology has a lot of different benefits, but it really depends on what the use case is as to what the main driver for their adoption is going to be.
You talked about fuel flexibility. You mentioned earlier, you mentioned diesel fuel, natural gas, propane, and hydrogen. Does that pretty well sum up the fuels you like to see?
So we've actually identified over 20 fuels. So the list goes on. I mean, dimethyl ether, JPA, ammonia. I mean, it's a long list that we can run up.
And that begins to give you tremendous flexibility as you think about different countries. I don't know if people realize how much fuel varies. Fuel in Africa is nothing like gasoline in America. Relatively different than diesel fuel in Europe or South America. So all of a sudden, if you're using liquid fuels, you got a lot of options, but it provides for you to be a solution really across the globe, right?
Yeah, very true. And it also just provides like this flexibility of if you're someone that is going out and buying this power plant, hopefully it's going to be in existence or in operation for the next 10, 20, 30 years, right? I mean, these are long-term capital purchases. I don't think any of us can bet on what the fuel of choice is going to be over even maybe the next handful of years as opposed to the next 10, 20, 30 years. And so, you know, a few years ago, there was a huge push towards hydrogen. Now that that has pulled back, right? Obviously, there's the kind of fuels we conventionally go to of natural gas and propane and diesel. But maybe there's other fuels that we're not yet really considering or are on the forefront. So if you can go make a capital investment that you can look at and say, look, no matter what fuel we have availability to, or no matter what fuel is the lower cost fuel of this time, I'm going to be able to run on it. That provides you a pretty secure bet on your capital investment versus if you were to bet on, I'm going to put diesel engines in, and diesel prices, like we've seen recently, right, have skyrocketed. Well, maybe that's going to be, you know, financially no longer the right choice, and you're going to be looking at doing another capital investment in another technology. So it also provides you, like you mentioned, Africa, the fuel can change. Even in the U.S., like an oil and gas site, there's different purity levels from one wellhead to the next. And, you know, for us, we can usually, in most instances, handle those fuel differences versus not all engines can.
I know you have several sizes of power outputs, but let's talk. Do you find that you are a solution for the data centers, even the hyperscalers? Do you see that as a market for you?
Yeah. So maybe just for your viewers' reference, so we have a 200 kilowatt module. That's kind of our base system. And then we also have a 800 kilowatt, 1.6, 2.4, 3.2 megawatt system. And it can scale in increments of 800 kilowatts. And the reason for that is, and this is very unique to us as well, is that 200 kilowatt four shaft core that we call it, our Carnot core, that's really our building block that we then just stack those together to get the amount of power you need. So same idea as what like a Tesla has in its floorboard, right? You've got thousands of these small battery cells all strung together to give you the amount of power you want. We're taking the same concept and applying it to power generation, where you have this 200 kilowatt core and you just stack them to get the power you need. So for big data centers, I mean, the really big ones, we're talking about like a gigawatt of power or high hundreds of megawatts of power. That would be a ton of our system. So more of the discussions we're in on that end is we can be your transient handler. So if you think of like AI compute, it's actually extremely spiky in terms of the amount of power it draws. This is new to data centers, by the way. Like data centers in the past had very consistent power levels. Now it's like the edge of a sawtooth, it changes drastically, and you need systems to be able to handle that. Well, turbines aren't very good at handling peaks and valleys. And so what we're in discussions about is buy a turbine for your base 800, 900 megawatts of power, and then buy Carnots or technology like us for your top 100 megawatts of power, and we'll be able to handle those transients. Or if you go the other side of like 10 megawatt, 50 megawatt data centers, then you would just be able to buy Carnots to be able to handle that much. So we're not saying we're like the end all be all answer. We definitely see other technologies as the right part of the mix, but we do think we hold a pretty unique value proposition to be able to help many of the different use cases.
I think most people read in the paper every day about data centers and their impact on power, positive or negative, their impact on pricing. But I don't think very many people really realize the whole transformation of the electric grid as we learn to interact with it differently. We bring on new cars, we bring on more air conditioners, we bring on more industrial development. And all of that creates a massive opportunity, not only at the high end, as you say, 500 megawatts to a gigawatt, but on the low end as well, 50 to 300. KW. How would you describe your ideal customer? When someone calls you and says, hey, this is what I'm wanting from you, what are the attributes of an ideal customer for you?
Yeah. I would say for the beginning here, and just for viewers' reference, we're at a point where we just started initial customer deliveries last year in 25. We're expanding deliveries in 26. And then 27 is where we're looking to start to scale. And so it's always good to just level set. You know, if a gigawatt data center came to us tomorrow and said, we want to, you know, in 26, 27, do all of it with Karnos, it's not going to happen. We're not there, right? So what we're trying to do in the beginning here is find customers who aren't solely competing just on cost per kilowatt hour, right? So as we talked about, the Navy has that pain point of wanting low maintenance, or oil and gas wanting to have more flexibility on the fuels that they can run, or data centers. We also see there's a benefit of being able to run on pipeline natural gas and on-site emergency diesel fuel as well, in case your pipeline has an issue, to just bolster the reliability of the whole system. So those are the customers that we look at in the beginning innings here, where we're like, this is awesome. This is perfect because, yeah, you want to experience our low-cost benefit, but that's not the pure reason you're buying. You want this other suite of benefits as well, or the emission side, like we were talking about. And then long-term, I mean, my vision for the company, the technology is, we will just compete on purely cost per kilowatt hour, right? I mean, we believe that this technology can let you make your own electricity cheaper than you can buy from most of the grid across the US. So if that's the case, why wouldn't you put one of these behind the meter and make your own power, control your own reliability, and control your own kind of destiny on what the cost per kilowatt hour is going to be?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good. You know, you've talked a little bit about the military application ships, but I realize I think you're doing even more across the military, isolated bases, but even rank and file military bases across the country are interested, right?
Yeah, that's true. I'm actually, I think it's in 2 days, I'm going to be heading up to one of the military bases here in Texas and exploring opportunities there. And so you're right. I mean, from the military's end, power is critical, right? And it's not just for ships. It's also for forward operating bases. It's also for kind of established bases, as well as other, you know, vehicle type applications we're looking at as well. Even as far as, you know, we're exploring things like, you know, could we couple this with nuclear technology to make electricity? Because once again, all we do is we need heat to make electrons. All nuclear does is it makes heat. That's it, right? So you got to determine how you're going to convert that heat from nuclear into electricity. We're a really prime candidate for that type of application. And so we see the military as being like a wide range of opportunities, something we're excited about. We recently expressed that we think that we'll probably be winning about 40 to 50 million of additional military contracts this year. And so that's a great you know, business for us, because those unique benefits of the product really get to shine. Like, you know, we're looking at deploying one of these systems in extreme cold weather, like really, really cold. And you know, we're looking forward to it, right? Because we don't have the downsides of, like, you put a diesel engine there, that oil, you know, doesn't like to operate at really significantly, you know, cold temperatures, versus our system doesn't have oil. Yeah, a lot for us to learn, but the military has been a great partner on this journey with us.
And we talk so much about, you know, there's a constant tension between, I guess, pro environment and people who are anti fossil fuels, who really talk about the only way to clean environment is going to be through solar and wind. I would submit that if you throw in cost, resilience, using your flameless technology with low carbon fuels, or even more importantly, mixtures of low carbon fuels and their renewable twins, i.e. natural gas, renewable natural gas, propane, renewable propane, you have a carbon intensity that probably rivals or beats anything known today, maybe beyond hydropower, right?
Yeah, and I'd say, I mean, Tucker, you know this better than I do, but like these renewable fuels, RNG, renewable propane, like, I mean, the way I like to think of it is you're basically taking pollution and actually making a positive byproduct out of it. And what comes out of the engine is a lot cleaner than the pollution would have been in the front end. So, you know, the prime example is like, take a landfill, capture all that methane that would normally just be spewing off into the atmosphere, and let the Karno use that as its fuel. or you know, take the gas that comes from cows, as crazy as that sounds. I think our team did a study once. They were like, the methane produced by, I think, 800 cows can power 200 kilowatts of you know, can provide 200 kilowatts of electricity. So if you've got a farm with 800 cows, you know, we can take that negative byproduct and actually provide electrons from it.
That's a massive amount of power if you think about it, you know. So let's talk about you personally and maybe your personal journey, and then, because it's such a good story, right? You're a Carnegie Mellon, you kind of have this vision, and you never let it go. Years later, it's still the vision you're executing. Talk our listeners through kind of when you had that epiphany or whatever about how Carno could be, and maybe fill in from that day till today.
Sure, and yeah, and it's great to be chatting with you about this because you've seen the journey, the different ebbs and flows of it, right? You've been along this journey with us here. 2015, had this idea while I was in college of go electrify the commercial vehicle space. So think of like the big semi trucks, move them off of diesel, move them onto electric. Worked on that. We were having a lot of success. In 2020, we took the company public on the New York Stock Exchange. We raised about $750 million to the date at that point into the company. Yeah, most of it had come from that public offering. And that really set us up for, you know, heading down this journey of being a predominant provider of electric powertrains. And as we were going down that path, GE Aerospace actually approached us and said, hey, we're working on this really unique Carno power module technology that could be awesome for charging the batteries in the trucks. Do you guys want to co-develop it? Well, fast forward, yeah, we start co-developing it, and then we actually end up acquiring that division, the technology, the IP. The whole team came over with the acquisition, and you know, it moved over to Hyliion, then pushing that journey forward. And a year or two after that, we were running both the electric vehicle business and the power gen business. And we saw the writing on the wall that EVs were heading into a pretty bad storm, pretty tough headwinds, where mandates were getting pushed out or just eliminated, costs were skyrocketing, fleet adoption was pulling back. And we made the really tough decision, but bold decision of why don't we get out of the electric vehicle business, even though that was like the foundation of the whole company. Why don't we get out of that and then go all in on this Carno power generation technology? Because that's where we saw the future was. That's where things were heading, where electrons were what people needed. EVs were slowing down. And that's what we've been doing for the last couple of years. As I mentioned, you know, getting initial units out last year to customers, and then this year hitting planned commercialization later in the year, 27 starting to scale it. And, you know, it's all finally starting to come together here. But it hasn't been this, you know, straightforward journey over the last 10 years. There's been some major pivots and changes and ups and downs throughout it all as well.
Well, in fairness, it hasn't been like the market has been exactly linear. You've gone through three presidents, I think, in that period, or two for sure, and a lot of volatility in prices. It's just really rewarding to see where you are now and know that you're going to be ready, as you said, to scale up really next year, which is incredibly close. Let's just stay on technology one moment, because I think the other thing I find very interesting, use a lot of advanced manufacturing techniques. I mean, I love trying to explain to people how engineering has come so far, how advanced manufacturing is just in a different place than it was even when you had this vision back in the early 2020s, right there. You rely on 3D printing for a lot of your key components. Can I talk about maybe how you're using technology to move your product forward?
Yeah, so we like to look at it as this Carno technology only exists because of additive manufacturing. Like if we remove the 3D printing, the additive manufacturing from the equation, we don't have a product, right? I mean, this manufacturing technique really enabled us to hit the efficiency, the size, the power density of this system. And so, you know, a lot of people, when you hear 3D printing, you think of like the desktop, let me take some plastic filament and go around and I can make a part, which Absolutely. That's awesome. What we're actually doing is metal additive manufacturing. So the way it works is you actually have a metal plate and you put some metal powder down on it. And then you have this laser that goes around and it welds the shape of the layer of a part. And then the part drops down a little, you lay some more powder down, and that laser goes around and it welds the next layer to the layer below. But you can obviously change the shape and geometries as you go layer by layer. And that allows us to create parts that, as you were saying, just not too long ago, just, you know, a decade or two ago, like, wouldn't have been able to even be conceptualized, right? Or, you know, you could never make it, versus now the printer doesn't care if it's making a super simple part or a super complex part. It's just a laser going around welding whatever you imagined in your CAD file. And so we've developed truly some of the most advanced parts you've ever seen before that never could be manufactured through CNC machining or a mill or a lathe, that thanks to additive we can make. And that's what's allowing us to hit the performance that we're talking about. Like, for instance, one of the heat exchangers in our system, you know, if you read a textbook, it would say the most you could really get out of a heat exchanger is in the 80%. Now, textbooks, for the most part, were considering conventional manufacturing. In practice, people really only got in the 60s for heat exchangers. We've got a part that actually is in the 90s in terms of efficiency, because it was just a geometry that was never thought could be made before, that thanks to 3D printing, we actually can. So it's amazing, you know, what these machines can do and the unlocks that 3D printing is able to bring forward.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize, I think in many respects, that story's just got it all, right? This flameless technology, which results in uber low emissions. And that's one reason, you know, I see it in California myself, where, you know, they really want to get to a cleaner climate, and this fits there. So you have this fuel agnostic, or I think you call it, what do you call multi-fuel or whatever?
Fuel agnostic.
In that, and then we haven't talked about it, but it allows you to really start on natural gas today, go to renewable natural gas, one day go to blends of renewable natural gas and hydrogen, or propane and hydrogen, and then one day be straight up hydrogen, if that's the world that evolves by 2060. It's just a great story, and then fits in this middle of the power curve. I mean, I guess as you look back today, aren't you glad you left your original vision for heavy duty trucking to fill this void in power gen?
Yeah, I am. I mean, obviously it's tough as a founder. You know, you put all your blood, sweat, and tears into this idea to then ultimately say, this wasn't the right journey or the right time for this journey. Let's go do something else. That's obviously challenging, but to your point, like, very happy we did it. And we still got a lot to go prove, though. I mean, we went to market, you know, at a couple of $1 billion market cap. We shot up to about a $10 billion market cap. Then we went all the way down to 100 million, and now we're back up to a few hundred million. So from my end, we still got a lot to go prove and, you know, get these units out there and show the world, you know, what this Carno technology is really capable of. And, you know,
well, I'm willing to bet on you. One of the things we love doing on Path to Zero is use a magic wand. I'm going to hand you that wand in just a moment and allow you to use it one time for one thing in the next year. So lots of ones, one thing, one year, one use that you think would have the most impact on your space in the energy world. Thomas, how would you use that magic wand?
Yeah, so from an industry standpoint, the magic wand would be in really enabling behind the meter power generation. So we still see a lot of our customers run into roadblocks, whether it's working with their utility or the rules and regulations around setting up behind the meter power. Now, the nice thing is that the current administration, I was actually at one of President Trump's speeches not too long ago, and he said, we're going to push for 2-week acceptance of any proposal for behind the meter power generation that comes across the plate of the Energy Dominance Council, is the new name of it. But I think that's a big thing, right? We really got to enable this behind the meter generation. It's all heading that way, but a magic wand would be to really streamline that process. Hopefully the 2-week approvals come to life.
Yeah. Great use of the wand. Love that. And I did, and until we figure out how to permit faster, we're going to still be well behind the power curve of what we need to be. So that's a great use of the wand. The other thing we love to do is plant a tree in honor of the time you spend here today, the expertise you share with us. I know you went to Carnegie Mellon, but you're a proud Texan, I think. Where would you have us plant that tree in a national forest?
Yeah, so because of the Texas origin now, our home base is here, the Sam Houston National Forest, which I think the closest one to us here in Austin, Texas. So figure keep it in the great state of Texas.
A beautiful place and a place that our producer, Russ, loves to go. So that will be easily served. It's a great use. Before I let you go, I just want to give you a chance to maybe talk about something I didn't talk about with you. For sure, tell our listeners where they can learn more about Hylion, about you, about your progress. Anything you want to tell us?
Yes. So one, you know, please go check out our website, hylion.com, H-Y-L-I-I-O-N. One of the other things, we're trying to be a lot more active on social media. So whether it's our company social media or my personal one. So it's Thomas Healy, CEO, whether it's on Instagram or Twitter. You can join this journey with us and then, you know, be a part of this, right? We think we're developing this really awesome technology and would love to have you along for the journey.
That's great. Thomas, it's been so fun knowing you, watching you grow. Thanks for spending time with us today and sharing your vision on Path to Zero.
Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Our thanks to Thomas Healy for joining us and sharing his perspective on the future of power generation. If you enjoyed this episode of Path to Zero, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or YouTube and leave us a review. It really helps us to grow the show. You can also find more conversations like this, along with articles and insights on the Path to Zero Substack. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Path to Zero.